Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Communication is a key ingredient in a successful marriage, but that is made easier, or is it, or more difficult when one of the spouses suffers from ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. I'm joined by two experts on the subject. Wes Crenshaw is a psychologist and the author of I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not, Successful Living with ADD or ADHD. Melissa Orloff is a marriage consultant and the author of The Couple's Guide to Thriving with ADHD and The ADHD Effect on Marriage. It has been cited as one of the very best books on that subject. I thank you both so much for being with us today. Melissa, thank you.
I am delighted to be with you.
Wes, great to see you again.
Good to see you, Don.
Let me start with you with the basics, and I think we've had this part of the discussion before, but for those who haven't heard, what is the difference between ADD and ADHD?
Never fails to be a worthwhile question. I always say it's bad branding is the difference right there. We used to talk about ADD with and without hyperactivity, and then in the current last two diagnostic manuals, numbers 4 and 5, they just have decided to call everything ADHD. And so you have ADHD with or without hyperactivity. And I always say without hyperactivity, it's sort of like ordering a cheese pizza without the cheese. So people will get a little frustrated because you'll say, well, I think maybe you have ADHD. And they'll be like, I'm not hyperactive. And that's not really the primary issue. It's more the inattentiveness, and the hyperactivity is secondary to that.
Well, let's talk about for just one second about hyperactivity. What are we talking about?
It depends. If you're a younger person, particularly a boy, that's the thing about driving, moving around as if driven by a motor is the old line. And so you may see actual hyperkinesis, or the big movements. In girls of any age, it's less common. You'll see more of a restlessness or fidgeting, twirling of the hair, little things like that that are just minimal harbingers of hyperactivity. For folks that get over the age of 20, a lot of times that's just that feeling of restlessness, like the name of the book, Always Want to Be Where I'm Not, and not so much the hyperkinesis, the big movement. Now, there are adults who are still pretty hyperactive. I see them all the time. But the main element there is usually inattentiveness.
Melissa, of course, we're going to be talking about this today in terms of relationships, marriage, and what do you see? I know that you've had some personal experience with this. What are some of the common issues that arise in relationships as a result of ADHD?
Well, I have had personal experience. I do not have ADHD. My husband does have ADHD, so we're one of those mixed couples. What you see actually is some incredibly predictable patterns that show up because the ADHD is there. So the most common pattern, or the most common couple, is one that didn't know about the ADHD when they got together. And so all these things, like the distractibility, a partner who isn't really paying much attention or who doesn't complete tasks when they say they're going to and intend to, not feeling very loved because somebody is disconnected, a lot of those things can point to ADHD being there and not being diagnosed or being undermanaged. So a lot of very predictable patterns that these couples fall into, and also responses to ADHD symptoms, whether you know they're there or not.
Can I ask you, if I may, how it's been reflected in your marriage?
I like to joke, my husband and I were completely and totally average. We had all of the worst patterns, including what I call parent-child dynamics, where the non-ADHD partner, in an effort to get control over the sort of inconsistency and unreliability and chaos of the relationship, starts to exert a lot of controlling behaviors, a lot of nagging and things. I admit to that. And also, I felt very lonely in my relationship for years, not understanding why. My husband and I both thought, wow, we should be able to do better, but why are we, you know, chronically angry at each other? Why do I feel so lonely? Well, it was because he had the number one adult symptom, which is distractibility, and he was distracted by everything, and I was just one of many, many things that might be on his mind at any given time. And we were very unhappy, which is actually what inspired me to get into helping couples who were impacted by this. We now are in great shape, but it took quite a bit of learning. And I said, other couples probably need this information too. And that's how I got into it.
I imagine it was quite a strain making that marriage survive.
Tremendously so. The research would suggest that while the the divorce rates for people who have ADHD in their relationship are similar when they're younger, as they are together for a longer period of time and they work hard to try to fix things and still struggle because most of them, again, don't know about the ADHD, that the divorce rates go way up. It's really hard. More than half of couples who are impacted by ADHD are really, truly struggling in their relationship. So it's very, the good news is, however, that if you know what the patterns are, you can interrupt them and you can learn to really thrive again, which is great.
Wes Crenshaw, you're sitting here nodding in affirmation. You're hearing some very familiar themes, aren't you?
Yeah, there's a good reason that Melissa and I hang out together because we very much have found a lot of the same things in our experiences and in our work. The way I look at it is that everybody tends to either lean toward the anxious side or toward the ADD side. And that doesn't mean everyone's diagnosable. It just means that's their tendency. And so people who are leaning to the anxious side but aren't diagnosable are the very careful people, very fastidious. They keep track of things closely. And the people who lean to the ADD side, though not diagnosable, are the folks who are very carefree. They're the fun folks at the party we all like to hang out with. The farther you lean toward a diagnosis, the more you may fall over into the diagnosis. And so what you will see at working with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of couples over the years, I have found, is that the anxious people tend to gravitate towards the ADD people, or the careful people tend to gravitate towards the carefree people. That's just a lot more fun. And when you see it different than that, when you see two anxious people together or two ADD people together, well, hijinks ensue at that point. So there's a logical reason it happens. And Melissa's example of her own marriage is illustrative of the careful person and the carefree person getting together. This then sets up all sorts of dynamics for this caretaking role for the more careful partner and a frustration with that. And so you have to really retrain people to think of each other differently because they're not on that wavelength when they get together.
Let me put this question to you and then ask Melissa also to answer it. How can you possibly go into a relationship if you've known someone long enough and well enough to get married and you don't know that there's this other issue?
Well, you may be assuming that people pay attention to those things when they don't. But the other thing is we always hate the person we married for all the reasons we loved them when we were dating them. Being carefree is super cool when you're dating. And then when you're married, that becomes careless or irresponsible. And being, very careful and fastidious is neat when you're dating, like you're a responsible person. Then when you're married, it's stodgy. You know, you're a stick in the mud. You don't even want to do anything anymore. And so people do go in often with their eyes open, not realizing the longer-term implications of those personality characteristics.
Melissa?
Well, I have a somewhat different take on it because, among other things, I bristle when he says anxious and careful.
That's why I switched it to careful just for you,
okay.
Melissa.
But I would say, you know, nobody for our generation in particular, nobody was thinking about adult ADHD at that time. So people wouldn't have been able to identify ADHD symptoms because they didn't know what to look for. The stereotype was the hyperactive little boy, and that's really not the way most adults experience ADHD. It's much more on the distractible end of things. The other thing that happens, which is I think actually very interesting, is that the biology of infatuation during the courtship is such that your brain gets loaded up with a whole lot of extra dopamine, which means that the ADHD partner who's normal sort of ADHD brain doesn't have enough dopamine. That's part of why they have ADHD. That ADHD is actually covered up. So my husband was exceptionally attentive. In fact, he was the most attentive person that I had ever dated. And after about 2 years to about 26 months, somewhere in there, that dopamine level returns back down to normal. And so what that couple is then faced with is sort of a new person in the relationship who wasn't there before. That ADHD partner is suddenly back at the low dopamine state, which means very inattentive, typically. So they also often, couples don't actually realize that this is going on at all. You know, all they see is that they're complementary to each other and that there's a great deal of energy that they get from the relationship because they're complementary to each other. It's quite exciting. It's a lot of fun. They're really good together.
And then one day they wake up and one says, "My God, I married a stranger."
Yeah, pretty much. And it's a very confusing time for the couples that this does happen to. You first you're confused and then you're kind of angry because it's an ADHD symptom, it doesn't go away. You bring it to your partner's attention, but if you don't know about the ADHD, you don't know how to address it. And so you start to become more angry that you keep saying to your partner, I need you to pay more attention, and the partner doesn't manage to do it. And then a lot of negative things ensue.
Wes, with what Melissa has said about dopamine, it makes me think that you can deal with this medically and probably effectively.
Well, it is more complex than just taking medicine. Everything gets better. I will say the research is very clear that medicine is a very helpful tool and if used correctly in addressing ADD. But even more importantly there is – Melissa's absolutely right. You've got to know what you're dealing with. And there's – we've talked about it before that there's this perception that ADD is, quote, overdiagnosed. And the reality is it's probably underdiagnosed. There are bunches of people who are struggling and don't really know why or don't want to hear why or are looking for why and can't find anyone to tell them. And so as Melissa points out, if you've got that in a couple where people just think it's because the other person's an idiot or something, they're not a nice person, that isn't maybe the problem. It may be they are dealing with ADD. And all professional associations pretty much agree that it is something that is a huge impact on marriage and other social relationships.
Well, how widespread is it? Do we have any idea?
Yeah, it's always a sort of a trick answer, if not question, because we don't know how many people have ADD, so we don't know if it's over or underdiagnosed. It's a conundrum, but it's millions of Americans are diagnosed and treated for it.
Melissa, do you have any thoughts on that? I'm sure that you've gotten into that somewhat in the research you've done.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so the sort of generally accepted number is about 5% of adults, but there are a lot of adults who are what they call subclinical,
right,
who show many of the traits but who aren't diagnosable for one reason or the other. It's interesting that you think about knowing about the ADHD and how important that is. One of the reasons, if you think about this, not knowing that it's a symptom, if your partner is really distracted from you, as mine was from me, and I just started to feel really lonely, and he didn't respond because he continued to have this brain that kept him distracted, I started to feel as if he didn't love me because he wasn't paying attention to me. And that leads to a very bad place in a marriage, obviously. If you know it's a symptom and you know it's distractibility, instead of getting angry or frustrated at your partner for not paying attention to you when you've repeatedly asked for it, you can simply go to your partner and say, hey, I've been feeling as if you've been more than normally distracted. How about if we go out on a date? And suddenly you have a very different kind of interaction. That's the kind of power in terms of making a relationship healthy and whole that just knowledge helps with. And then, of course, there are lots of different treatments that couples and people with ADHD can use to really work well with ADHD symptoms. It does not have to get in your way.
We're talking about ADHD and its impact on marriages. My guests are Wes Crenshaw, a psychologist and author, and Melissa Orloff, a marriage consultant and also an author on this subject. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our guests, Melissa Orloff and Wes Crenshaw. Before we take some calls, and we have some coming in, let's talk for a moment, Melissa, about treatment. What is out there for folks to deal with this situation?
Well, there are a lot of things out there. I like to talk with couples, since I'm not a medical professional, about how to optimize treatment. So I think of it in three legs, the first leg being the physiological leg, which includes things like exercise, getting better sleep. Both of those actually make a big difference. Medications, of course, some fish oil, things like that. Things that change the chemistry of the brain so that you can focus better and manage the ADHD symptoms better. And then there's a leg of behavioral changes, habit changes, things like making lists, using a calendar, setting alarms and reminders, having certain systems that you put in place, because the ADHD mind is very unstructured. So creating structures externally helps. And then the third leg for couples is the interactive things. How do they interact around chores? What kind of system will they have, for example? And many kinds of conversations and things which we don't have time to get into. But it's a very comprehensive way to manage ADHD symptoms, both for the person who has the ADHD and also within the relationship.
Wes, would you add anything to that? The fish oil kind of took me by surprise.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful list. And, yeah, there's some evidence that fish oil is helpful for a lot of brain issues. It's not going to cure ADD, but I take it and my kids take it, and I think it's probably worthwhile for also cholesterol reduction. What a good deal. I'm just going to go the other direction since she gave such a good list and say what not to do. One of the perceptions in the world about this overdiagnosis, overmedication thing comes from what I would call the poor diagnosis issue. It's not over, it's poor diagnosis. And so people go in and have a 7-minute conversation with their primary care physician and walk out with a bottle of Adderall or something. And really, that's not how anyone recommends that you do it. And yet that's the most common example. What we strongly urge is that you first go in and work with a mental health professional who is trained and has experience in both the diagnosis and treatment, and then get a referral for medication, which is very clearly helpful, and then learn some techniques with medication that are not commonly taught, one of which is that with prolonged usage, all stimulants build a tolerance effect where you need more of the medicine to get the same effect. And so we'll get people come in our office on a huge amount of medicine, and then it's lost its effect. So you really have to nurture this. And, you know, you don't go in and take an antibiotic usually for 3 years or something. So people don't have an experience of long-term medication use a lot of times. So you've got to combine that with all of the things Melissa was talking about, systematizing, learning behaviors. A lot of things I talk about in the book really fit with that kind of daily living.
You know, the only time I ever hear about dopamine, it seems to me, and I'm not a medical guy, but it's in connection with Parkinson's disease. Is there a relationship between ADHD and Parkinson's?
None that has been shown. Dopamine's a lot more important than a lot of folks think because it has to do in the frontal lobe with what's called executive function. And just for fun, it also has to do with sex drive. When you increase dopamine, you increase a lot of times sexual interest. So those things seem to go together. But without that dopamine in the frontal lobe, you're not able to focus your attention where you want it to go or check behavior that's not that good an idea, which is what we call impulsivity, and a lot of those kind of things. That's where that comes into play.
I'd like to take some calls. Let's get started on that now. We'll begin with Jason, who's calling from St. Louis. Jason, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hey, yeah. Well, how you doing? First of all, Mr. Marsh, man.
Great.
Good to hear you.
Great. Nice to talk to you. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, I'm a veteran that suffers from PTSD, and a lot of times I do feel as if I do suffer from symptoms also of ADD. I mean, is there some type of correlation? Like, what do I do? Because, you know, I hear you mentioning fish oils and things like that. I do have high cholesterol, and I think that will help. But what would I do, a person like me?
Well, first, thank you for your service. And PTSD is a really tricky situation because symptoms of ADD can mask PTSD or vice versa. So the thing you want to do is get with somebody who's really good at separating out the parts of diagnosis that best fit you. And if you're having one does not want to aggravate some of the symptoms of PTSD with stimulant medication, but likewise, you don't want to go without properly treated ADD just because you also have PTSD. Did that make sense? So you want somebody who can really work and talk with you. And the most important thing, I cannot emphasize enough, in treating ADD in therapy is having a good conversation with a professional. Everything I ever learned about ADD, I have learned from talking to people with ADD. And I hope they learned something from me. And so that's a team collaborative effort, and hopefully they can sort out what is PTSD for you and what is ADD and how to proceed on that. It's a very significant issue, my friend.
Thanks for the call, Jason. Melissa, is there anything you would add to that?
No, I stay away from the medical stuff. That's not my area of expertise.
Okay, let's bring in another listener. Rachel joins us from St. Louis. Rachel, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm actually dealing with this situation exactly as you're speaking about it. I'm 38, been married for 17 years, and I'm also diagnosed much later in life with ADHD because I was a female. I wasn't running around. You know, I wasn't jumping off the walls. And I just wanted to mention the idea that being able to cope with ADHD, is not that hard. But when you're have more responsibilities as marriage goes on, and you have more kids and more things going on in your life, your symptoms are going to get exacerbated. So, you know, you might have more anxiety because of it. And, you know, whatever, I don't know. I'm just dealing with the same thing, you know, dealing with the idea of using medication, not using medication, learning coping skills and stuff like that, and then trying to figure it out between you and your spouse. But just that, you know, we can deal with ADHD, but we have to, you know, kind of focus the same way that you're describing.
Rachel,
using tools.
Thank you for the call. Did you, Wes, go ahead. You look like you're ready to go.
Well, yeah. One of the things I recommend in the book is, to the extent possible, and I understand it's difficult, is to try to create as minimalist a life as you can. Now, I'm not saying you should, you know, put your kids up for adoption or something, but you need to probably try and get it down to the most essential things you want to do. Too often with ADD, getting stuff is cool and getting rid of it isn't, whether that stuff is too many job assignments or too many things in the home or whatever. And so it is true that as life becomes more complex, it also becomes more overwhelming. And for folks with ADD, being overwhelmed, whether it's in a relationship or a social relationship or work, is a big, big concern. And it can really hurt the marital relationship when one person is really flooded.
Exactly what I'm doing. Exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah, good.
In my own personal life, I've read about Marie Kondo, who does a whole minimalistic approach and to owning possessions. And I've gotten rid of a ton of stuff, and it clears up your head, you know.
You are my hero. So. Good job.
I would add one thing as well. Which is that it's not just the partner with the ADHD who contributes to the struggle. So it's also important for the partner who does not have the ADHD to understand what his or her role is in the dynamics between the two of you. And there's a lot of stuff you can do. I have a lot of information at my website, including some seminars, which can be helpful. But at a bare minimum, get a conversation going around not just the ADHD symptoms, but about the interactions, what I call the sort of symptom-response-response cycle, where the responses to the ADHD make a big difference.
Yeah,
just one second, if you would. Melissa, give us your website. We'll put a link to it on ours, but just give it quickly so we can jot it down.
Great, okay. It's at www.adhdmarriage.com.
Okay, we'll put a link on our website. Go ahead, Wes.
Yeah, I send people there all the time. The way I look at this is I have my fundamental rule for people in the careful and carefree marriages, and that is that the ADD person has to not overtax the anxious person, and the anxious person has to become more tolerant of the ADD person. All of that is education. You learn about each other, and then I have a whole set of things to do beneath that, but it's about learning to be more tolerant and learning not to overtax. And when you're overwhelmed, it's easy to overtax your partner.
We'll take another call. Dara joins us from St. Louis. Dara, go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Sure.
I actually just had a question about, I'm actually blessed to have ADD, and I try to look at it as a positive thing and, you know, what can I bring to the table? But actually, I had done some personal research throughout the years, and there had been something I had read about the correlation in between the migratory gene and causing ADD symptoms. So I didn't know if that was something that was actually good for our civilization, that got us moving and got us going, but now we're kind of dealing with having to be stagnant and staying in one place.
I think this is the old deal about the little farmers and the little hunters, if I remember right. Here's the thing. In each chapter of my book, I have a section on what's helpful about each aspect of ADD, and it's absolutely true. There are some things that are pretty handy about ADD. But here's the hang-up that a lot of folks hear when they hear, wow, it's an asset, I'm glad I have it, is they don't experience it that way. And by the definition of the diagnosis, it means you're impaired. And so when we treat it, we have to treat it as an impairment to justify treating it. So I'm all for looking at the bright side, but we also have to realize it's very, very hard on people. And I want folks listening to know that Melissa and I have seen it, and we understand that as well as the benefits.
We're going to have to move along. I have a couple of emails here that I'd like to just get a quick reaction to. My daughter, 28, diagnosed with ADHD, has been in a long-term relationship. Her fiancé is aware of it, but has a hard time dealing with the symptoms like poor money management and inability to complete tests. What do you suggest for dealing with this? Marriage counseling an option?
Do you want to take a shot
at
that?
Yeah, go ahead, Melissa.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll take a shot at that one. So that's poor money management is actually something that is and job problems and other things are correlated with ADHD. So this is a very real issue for a whole lot of people. There are a couple different things. In a couple, you can understand what each person's strengths and weaknesses are and try to accommodate those rather than assume that every person has to be perfect or good at everything. The person who's the better money manager, for example, can take on that responsibility while the other person takes on something else that they're particularly good at. That's one approach. Another is to create some of these external structures. So the ability to, for example, use, I didn't mention mindfulness, but there's quite a bit of research that suggests that mindfulness is quite good for people with ADHD. So to combine, say, mindfulness training along with an external structure where you pay bills exactly on the first of the month and the 15th of the month, and you have a very specific basket that they get put into, those kinds of things, you can start to do that. Some people cut up their credit cards and only use cash. There are a lot of different ways. Some people use Mint, which will send them reminders to be able to know where they are on their monthly budget and how much money they have left for that month. All sorts of ways to set up these structures, as well as work with the strengths of the partner who is best at that. I always tell people, don't transition to somebody that you think can't manage the finances. Don't suddenly give them the finances until, if they have ADHD, they have a structure in place.
I agree 100% with all of those. And I'm going to add, yes, not only go see a marriage therapist, but for people who are diagnosed with ADD, conjoint therapy, meaning with your partner, is paid for by insurance. Regular marital therapy just to fix a relationship isn't. But if you have that diagnosis, that's part of the treatment. I rarely see anybody individually as an adult with ADD. I almost always see them with their partner because of how much these issues are difficult. And when I say you need to help build the tolerance of the person, the careful person for the carefree person, I'm not saying put up with anything. I'm saying realize, just like Melissa is saying, that some folks have strengths and weaknesses, and we really want to not overload their weaknesses.
I'm going to take a final call here from Cindy calling from Webster Groves. She has word on a support group locally for just what we're talking about. Cindy, go ahead, but I have to ask you to make it quick, please. We'll put a link to your organization on our website. Go ahead.
Thanks. I am the coordinator for Gateway CHAD, which is the local organization of CHAD, which is a nonprofit support group for children and adults with ADHD. And I highly recommend Melissa's first book. I haven't read her second, but I wanted to let the audience know that we have two support groups, but more importantly for this conversation, we have a partner support group. And it's a safe space for partners to participate in a facilitated discussion that also includes an educational component on ADD. We meet monthly, and you can go to our website. We actually have a meeting tonight at the Webster Groves Public Library at 7 o'clock.
We'll put that information on our website so folks can check it out at stlpublicradio.org. I'm afraid I've got to end it there. A very quick segment here. Wes Crenshaw and Melissa Orloff, thank you so much for being with us. Melissa is the marriage consultant and the author of The ADHD Effect on Marriage. Psychologist Wes Crenshaw, author of I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD. Thank you both so much.
Good to be here.
Great to see you.
Thank you.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.